Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Home Healthcare News Editor Andrew Domlin. Today, we're diving into the hospital at home model, acute hospital care at home waivers 2-year extension, and how home health and home care providers can fit in. We're joined by Kaiser Permanente's Dr. Stephen Perotti, one of the nation's experts on this topic. Perotti is the Executive Vice President of External Affairs, Communications, and Brand at the Permanente Federation. He's the Associate Executive Director of the Permanente Medical Group. Okay, Dr. Perotti, thank you so much for joining me. Obviously, since we last talked, there's a lot of developments in terms of hospital at home. With the spending bill at the end of the year, things have changed. There's a little bit more certainty moving forward. How welcomed is that certainty moving forward? How are things generally?
Yeah, thank you, Andrew, for talking about this topic. And so, first of all, I think it's critically important that that bill pass because it provides stability for our existing program and for programs across the country in terms of being able to pursue this new model of care. We have assurance that for the next 2 years, there's going to be regulatory framework and approval for being able to move forward. It allows for the collection of more data, more information on the quality, safety, and efficiency of these existing programs. And I think just as importantly here, it's going to allow for additional new programs to come online. And I think that there are a couple of things to learn from that. One is obviously there will be more volume of patients. So the ability to study those things that I was referencing will grow. But I think that we're also going to learn with the newer programs coming online, how to build and scale the programs and more efficiently and more effectively. I think it also opens up the opportunity because of the way the bill was worded to create measures, eventually some benchmarks for performance of these programs. And I think there's two parallel tracks for that. One is comparing these new programs to brick and mortar facilities and actually identifying what new measures are available for these particular programs that are going to be unique because we're providing the care in the home. And then I think that the last part of this is it opens up the door for looking to expand these services beyond the hospital. So looking at models that do look at lower acuity care, particularly patients that need emergency care and or complex needs care and being able to provide that in the home.
Okay, great. And so just for our audience, Dr. Perotti, if they might not be familiar with some of the benchmarks that you've talked to me about in the past and why you want those instilled, can you give us a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, sure. So I think number one, there are basic quality measures that we currently have in brick and mortar facilities. The Medicare Stars program actually outlines a number of those. We want to hold ourselves to the same level of accountability in the home when it comes to the safety measures, preventing healthcare acquired conditions and infections, falls, and making sure that patients are ambulating in the home. We're preventing delirium just like we would in a hospital in the home. So all of those basic things. Then there's sort of the second piece that's important, which is making sure that we have good measures for patient satisfaction and the patient experience. So there are measures that currently exist within the hospitals, brick and mortar today. We want to have those same ones for the home and perhaps actually have some that are even better. We can actually measure response times to patient needs in the home more accurately than we can in a brick and mortar facility, because I can actually track when does the patient call? When do we respond? When did we get on video? When did we dispatch somebody into the home, either to provide direct care or to deliver a service or good into the home? So all of those things are going to be things we want to be able to measure.
Okay, great. And so one of the things we've also talked about in the past is that, you know, the acute hospital care at home waiver, it's been so great for so many health systems, so many patients. But there are obviously things that people would like to change about it to make it better for patients. One of which was, you know, I think you and I talked about before, recognizing these patients that could benefit from these services in the community as opposed to in the hospital. Is that something that you think you can push forward And there, are there other things you can push forward now that you have the stability of at least these next couple of years where you know for sure you have that backbone?
So in terms of the actual waiver protections that are now, you know, going to be extended for the next couple of years, that framework really is restrictive to the emergency department and the hospitals in terms of admissions of patients into the home.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the fact that you have that baseline, so you're going to be able to at least get a program off the ground, will allow programs to expand into other cases. And so, for example, at Kaiser Permanente, we've already got examples of programs that are, you know, taking patients in, not using the waiver program, and actually admitting patients from, say, an urgent care setting or even a home setting. And in fact, our newest program that just opened up in Washington State is, in fact, doing that as we speak.
Okay, great. And that's something we can get back to. We can get back at back to hospital at home at large. But I do want to use that segue and talk more about your program at Kaiser. Can you just give us a general update first on how everything is going, you know, what your census looks like, and at the beginning of 2023, where you're at?
Sure, yeah. So our two largest programs that had been either operating under a waiver or parallel to the waiver from 2020 to current, we're running a census of approximately 17 to 20 on any given day. And the covered population that's eligible is 1.1 million patients. We've now, as a program between Northern California and the Northwest, admitted over 2,500 patients. And since we last talked, we launched our program in Washington State. We're actually, what's interesting about that is that we don't own any hospitals in Washington State. So we're primarily admitting patients from our own clinical decision units or urgent cares into the program, which is different than Northern California and Northwest. We also plan to, as of this month, open a program in Georgia as well. We also have a program in Southern California that actually has been around for a while. It's a little different than the four other states that I referenced, in the sense that we have a homegrown program. So we're also tracking that program as well. So there's a lot of opportunity here to learn about, you know, the different approaches that we can take, either admitting from alternative sites and looking at the level of acuity of patients, and also looking at, you know, the relative contribution to either a brick and mortar hospital that we own or don't own.
So why Georgia?
So Kaiser Permanente is in eight different states, as well as the District of Columbia. So Georgia is an interesting program because it's a mix of, you know, urban and then suburban areas. We also don't own a hospital there. So we're looking for alternatives to be able to place our patients and keep them within the total care of our integrated system. So we were interested in launching in Georgia because of those different reasons.
Okay, got it. And so obviously you all were very early on the implementation of these sorts of programs, but what do you think is next for you all in your mind in like 2023 and beyond? What is the next step to really make these programs, you know, even better than they have been the last few years?
So I think our big focus is how to scale these programs effectively.
Yep.
And so establishing clear delineation of what we need for the supply chain, given locale, and making sure that we have built-in redundancies to that supply chain so that the patients can get the medications, they can get their equipment, and we can get the personnel to the homes in a timely fashion. And as you sort of scale and have more volume, the easier it is to be able to have those built-in redundancies. If you think about it, you know, we're trying to build a hospital from the ground up. And so really our goal is to actually have both the infrastructure that I was describing in place, then also the personnel in place to be able to do it. The other thing I think that we're going to be exploring, because I was referencing now, you know, these different programs, is how do we use a virtual technology to actually connect the different programs together? You know, is it going to be possible, for example, to cross-license a physician across different states to be able to provide the care to these patients in different locales, particularly since we're building specified skill sets of, you know, hospitalists, physician assistants, nurses, et cetera, who can provide this care. And it is a different type of care than it is traditional hospital care. And so how can we use technology to also allow us to scale in ways that we wouldn't be able to do with a brick and mortar facility?
Okay, great. And as I mentioned before, you all are very, you know, far ahead on this. What do you think is the next step for hospital at home programs in general? You know, obviously, as you mentioned at the top, a lot of these programs didn't get up and running just because of the uncertainty behind the waiver. What do you think is the next step, whether it's advocacy, whether it's implementation, whether it's scaling? What do you think would be the biggest next step for the hospital home ecosystem at large?
So I think the immediate opportunity here is to get additional stakeholders interested in moving forward with programs. And so, you know, one would be health systems like Kaiser Permanente, but I think there are other opportunities here to look at healthcare payers, particularly health plans who have an interest in preventing readmissions, preventing healthcare related harm. And so, you know, looking at funding mechanisms for systems like mine, or even systems that, you know, are more rural based, to be able to build and scale these programs. So to actually build this into a benefit structure for a patient so that they can actually avail themselves of the benefits of this kind of a program. I think that's probably a big opportunity. I'd say in terms of the advocacy front, it's ensuring that we have a working partnership with CMS, with CMMI, to determine, you know, again, what good looks like. So to actually have concrete measures that we're going to be held accountable to, and so that we can actually study it and understand what a sustainable both clinical model and business model needs to look like for hospital at home.
Okay, Dr. Brody, I was wondering, do you have any interesting data to share when it comes to hospital home programs at large, or even just within your program? I know last time we spoke, you did have some interesting data that both showed the effectiveness of the programs and also kind of, I think there's some staff satisfaction numbers in there as well. So I was curious if you had any new data.
So, you know, looking at our current data, what we're seeing is that continued good results when it comes to the number of patients that are requiring either return to the emergency department or return to actual readmission to the hospital compares favorably to the brick and mortar hospitals. So, for example, with our readmission rates, we're seeing rates between 7 and 10%. The hospital at home program, that's a lot lower than the national benchmarks when you look at 30-day readmissions. With the 7-day return to care for ED, it's down below 2% for a program, which again compares favorably. In terms of the number of patients that are needing escalations into an emergency department from our actual hospital at home program, that's extremely low. We're talking about 0.1 to 0.5%. So, you know, what we're seeing is that, and those obviously all translate into both patient outcomes that are better, and then also reductions in healthcare costs. The average length of stay for our programs between 4 and 4.5 days, which again compares favorably to our brick and mortar census. So I think we're seeing a lot of good signals from the standpoint of the operational efficiencies of the program. And then, you know, from the standpoint of care acquired conditions, you know, they're almost unheard of in the program.
Right.
And so that's also really favorable. And then I'll just say the last thing is that a lot of the statistics that I had shared with you in terms of the patient satisfaction continue. Yes, and if you interview, I got to tell you, the people behind the stats, I've now got, I don't know how many patient videos that I could probably play for you, or we can even send you a couple that state, you know, gee, if I ever had to be in a hospital again, I want to be in my home. I don't want to have to ever go to a brick and mortar again.
Right.
And, you know, I think the ability to be in your own environment, with your own pets, with your own support system, is so important to people. And for the other end here, and I do want to speak to this for the, you know, I'm sure all what you're reading and hearing about in terms of healthcare worker burnout and frustration, that the physicians that work in this program consistently say that this is a really extremely satisfying part of their practice. We have people that are signing up for these shifts. They want to be in the program because it is such a different way of practice compared to the traditional approach. And it's not that people don't want to do the traditional approach, but they find a great satisfaction getting to know the patient at a different level than they ever had before.
Okay, fantastic. And so obviously Kaiser has a dedicated home health and hospice arm now. Obviously, home health is completely separate from hospital at home care. Are they involved at all, though, in certain areas with the program?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, actually, one of those four programs that I had referenced actually is working under a home health licensure model, and so we are involved with actually some of the staff that are being employed go through that home health licensure approach. So, but the answer to your question is that there is coordination with that approach. So in one of the programs, we actually do what's called restorative phase care, which approximates, not exactly the same as home health care. And the team that actually is the hospital at home team also does the restorative care. So there's no handoff. It's actually seamless. In our Northwest program, there is a handoff. So if a patient does need home health nursing care, then they actually transition into the home health program. So we do try to either be completely seamless, where just single team does it all, or in some cases, we do have the approach to being able to hand it off and transition if we need to into a direct home health setting. So I think the bottom line is that there's a lot of opportunity for learning and evolving what this needs to look like. And I think we should be, quite frankly, creative with this. And that goes back to the policy approach here, which is that if we have enough flexibility, we can actually learn about, you know, what kind of, again, payment models need to exist to allow for more seamless care than what the traditional approaches have been.
Absolutely. And that's actually a perfect segue into my next question, which is, and I know this is pretty general, Dr. Perotti, but if you could change one thing about hospital home care in the U.S. right now, what would it be? What would be the number one thing that you think needs changing?
So I think that the biggest, so there's, God, it's hard to restrict it to just one. let me sort of speak to maybe two. So one is that I think our approach in the country to paramedicine is something that's going to be critical to success of these programs, meaning that we need to be able to allow for different disciplines to be able to provide direct care in the home and not necessarily have to transport patients out of their home. We have a number of states that require, if a paramedic visits a home, to actually transport the patient. And we're finding with our programs is that there's so much more the paramedic, when tethered to a well-designed hospital team, can do in a home and allow a patient to continue to stay in their home and thrive there. So if I could wave a wand tomorrow and be able to have that additional capability across the country, I'd love to see that. I think the other big picture thing that I'd love to see is to think about what an incentive value-based payment model might look like for a hospital at home program. So can we do this in a way where a person that's being seen in an emergency department or in an urgent care setting, that the first question that's asked is, if they do need hospital level care, that it's, how do I get that person home? As opposed to, how do I get that person in a brick and mortar hospital? They actually reverse the paradigm for the way we think.
Okay, and then there's also some news that I think is worth touching on before we go. We're talking today on January 10th, Tuesday, January 10th, and there's Medically Home, who you are involved with. They're coming out with this new program, essentially, which is emergency department care at home. Do you think that that's a new frontier that can be explored? And do you think this is going to be more popular moving forward?
So I do think the movement towards providing ever more care in the home is going to be incredibly important. I think specifically when it comes to emergency department care in the home, I do think that that is going to be a critical need. And why do I think that? Number one is that if there's anything that we're seeing coming out of this pandemic is that our emergency departments are extremely busy. They're at unprecedented levels of patients that are coming in. And what we're seeing within Kaiser Permanente is that these patients are sicker. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a 5-point scale for determining how sick patients are. And the top two levels of acuity are the ones that have gone up the most in the last 5 years. With the aging of our population, I only expect that to continue. And, you know, we haven't had a large growth in emergency department infrastructure. So I think there's actually a need for being able to provide this type of service somewhere other than a traditional emergency department, if we can do it safely. And so I do think this is a new area of opportunity and frontier for being able to provide effective services. And then secondly, you know, from the hospital at home perspective, you can imagine a scenario where you'd have a more seamless transition. So rather than having a patient have to go to the emergency department only to be told, hey, you're okay, and you can be safely cared for in your home, why not just do that all in the home? And so I would love to realize that vision, and I'm excited by the potential opportunity here.
Okay, fantastic. Dr. Brody, that's all I have for you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Andrew. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Donlin, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.